Hello, welcome to this fourth episode of the Story Weave podcast. This is another piece by Duncan. This one is called Layer Cake. It's got a date attached to it. So I thought I'd let you listen to this one a little bit too. We're going to amplify some of this. And I'm going to do something a little different today too. You know, one of my favorite things is in the morning when I get up and I get a cup of coffee and a little piece of bread to eat or something, toast. Then I go out onto the patio outside and I sit out there and it's dark. And I love it. And that's really the best time for me to make a recording. So I often do make a recording with my iPhone, a little recorder app. And, you know, it's difficult to repeat that. And so what I thought I would experiment with this time is just to start with that recording, a recording that I made a few mornings ago. And we'll pick up the theme from that and then go on here with this podcast. Now, be aware that the voice change is going to occur here. My voice will be much lower in the morning. But that's when my thinking is clearest. And so I can articulate things in the morning that I just can't do during the day without a lot more work. So be ready for that. And after that, we'll come back to my daytime voice. So here we go. This is from just a few mornings ago. This is just a note for the fourth episode of the podcast. It should start with last time I really told you about the essence of things, but I broke it down. Here's the essence of things. Every objective thing is an embodiment of inner behavior, participating in the outer expanse around it with other embodiments of inner behavior. And so that encompasses all three, joining and participation, so the relational joining, participation, and the in here, out there. So the embodiments look like parts, but their inner behavior participates with the others. So that's a fairly concise way of looking at things. And the part that we will get to is that inner behavior. What's its characteristic? What drives that? And so that's a beginning for the fourth episode. But also, I think I want to include that. Why would you listen to this? I mean, this is going to be a series of entries that give you a picture of what's happened in history with science, and also give you an idea of what the alternative view. There's an alternative view that the scientific data supports but isn't told. So why would you want to know that if you're not interested in all of that? Because you're all helping people. And this is something that will help people help people, because it enhances awareness of what the condition we're all in. And some of the truths that you know deep inside and that you're sharing with people actually have sort of somewhat of a dissonance with the stories of physics and applied mathematics, but that's only because those stories are at that target that is not about helping people in the way that you're helping them. And so there's an alternative story, and that alternative story is supportive. So even though you probably will not want to know all of the details, the overall map of the story is very relevant to people who are helping people. And just another note, even if you're not really in the business of helping people, most of us want to be helpful. And so we can help direct, give suggestions and direct people in a certain direction. Young people, if they're very interested in mathematics, it would be great for them to know the stuff that's missing from the books after they've got a certain level of maturity. Let's say before they go into college or when they're in college or somewhere in there. so that you're not clashing with the high school teachers. High school teachers should know this. Also, if you have elders who had a background in mathematics and now they're retired, to just point them in this direction. Something interesting here, Grandpa. That could be helpful in a secondary way, helpful to them personally, because I think a person who has had a life of mathematics could get really lit up by understanding that there are things that we're not told. So now we come back to my regular voice, daytime voice. Listening to that recording, I realized that I left out the most important and direct helpers, which are the parents. Parents helping their children to understand themselves, understand self, other, and belonging. What's the nature of this place they're born into? Who are they, and how do they belong? And for those of you who help adults, think about how you help them. You help them to discover participants within themselves, participants that were formed probably in childhood, sometimes because of trauma. But, you know, in my case, I think more of just of the culture, your family culture you're born into. Participants form in childhood in order to survive and thrive and live through it. Even if it's great or bad or whatever, we form participants within us that help us to navigate our way into adulthood. And then helpers then help people recognize those participants within themselves that are sort of working automatically. And so to realize that this insideness of things, and to realize that things really are participants, not objects. So you can actually think, yeah, there's a participant within me that I feel is anger or whatever. And you can start getting to the business of trying to let that participant fade away. So you see, that's where joining comes in. Those relational participants within us join with us in our daily lives. And very many of them, we would like for them not to join. The participants that cause anger to well up, or jealousy, or envy, all of those sins, you know, in a large part come from participants within that have not been recognized and dealt with. So here, I hope you can begin to see the two things that I'm holding together. Are trying to hold together. They seem to be desperately different. Did you hear that thunder? It's raining like crazy outside. So on the one hand, I've said, look, physics, at the depth of physics, this is what you have. These three seeds or sprouts, in here, out there, parts and participants, and relational joining. And on the other hand, I've said that those are the very three perceptions that are at the basis for the way people help people today. And what I'm saying on the physics side and on the side of what I think it would be good for some people to learn is that these seeds or these sprouts grow, they flower up into stories about light and energy, the same stories of physics, but these stories from the new growth they're rigorous, they're mathematical. But the mathematics isn't black box mathematics. It's mathematics that can be understood through visualization. But instead of being a story out there like physics is, these stories of energy and light are stories about in here. Think of that atom now. The atom has an in-here-ness and an out-there-ness, just like we do. Well, the story of light and energy in this mathematics is a story of the inner behavior within things and an inner joining. The story of gravity But gravity-type behavior in this mathematics is a story of the inner behavior joining with the inner behavior. And the mathematics that makes that rigorous is beautiful. So, you know, I know that helpers don't want to necessarily learn that mathematics, but helpers would benefit from being aware of the history of all of that study of physicality and how, where it went astray as far as speaking to us and our insights. Where did it make the turn to where it is talking about just measurement, prediction, and control of material? That turn was made around the year 1900 or a little bit later. And it's a beautiful story. It's an explicit story. But it takes some work to get to it. So what I want to do in these podcasts is to outline the story, at least to where it registers for you helpers, for the helpers and for the parents. It registers what we're talking about. And then for those kids who are interested in mathematics or the retired people who were interested in mathematics, then I would like to teach them the whole flowering story of the new growth mathematics and how it tells a different story about the same behavior that is observed in physics. Same kind of behavior, I should say. And so I want to go through one more segment, kind of talking about that a little bit further, about how, you know, about this new growth mathematics. What's the nature of it? We're not going to talk about it directly, but what is the nature of it? So let's talk a little bit about mathematics and about history together. History and mathematics. And I want you to understand that this mathematics doesn't just come out of thin air. No, it emerges from two lines of thought that have run through history, both of them utilizing mathematics to frame the story. And so what we'll do now is make distinction between those two lines of thought. One of them is the line of thought that is physics. And it goes all the way back, at least in, you know, in this story, goes all the way back to Pythagoras, 500 BC, and goes forward to now. So it, and in the 1900s, early 1900s, that story took a turn and to where it narrowed its focus to measurement, prediction, and control. And it did so because of its encounter with the strange nature of light and atomic behavior. Because in the early 1900s is when they really began to precisely study the nature of light and the inner behavior of an atom. Of course, you know where that led us, to the atomic bomb, but it also led to those stories of modern physics with relativity and quantum behavior. So that line is not fiction. It is not fiction. But the truth of it is in its alignment with the experimental data. It is not fiction, but it's interpretive. And that's where we get to the target situation that we talked about in the first episode. The interpretations are aimed at that target of measurement, prediction, and control. So even though the experimental data can inform us about the other target, sensation, perception, and choice, the interpretive story of that line of thought does not serve us and our need to understand, our need to understand self, other, and belonging, and what the data has to say about that. Now let's talk about the other line of thought, which emerged in 1884 when Edwin Abbott wrote the book Flatland, A Romance of Many Dimensions. And here we have a first distinction of that second line of thought, and that it is cast into a fictional framework, but it is mathematical, and the mathematics is valid. Abbott thought of a flat plane, a geometric flat plane, and he imagined creatures living in that flat plane, and his story instilled in readers a clear perception that creatures like that would have limited sensory perception, limited sensory experience compared to us. If they only experienced in their sight and senses, their motion, only forward and back and left and right. They would have no concept of up and down like we do. And so that instilled another question is like, well, maybe we're missing a dimension. Maybe we have the, you know, forward, back, left, right, and up and down, but maybe there's a fourth dimension that we're missing. So that was so clear to readers, even with no mathematical experience, that the story carried forward to where it's still in print today. It still holds interest today. Now, to make the comparison, this was fictional in nature, but the mathematics was valid. And the mathematics of a flat plane is well understood. And then the higher mathematics of three-dimensional mathematics was understood well back then. And so it became really a matter of interest that maybe there is a fourth dimension that we have no perception of. So let's fast forward now a little bit, because there were many books written about dimensionality then. There was a lot of thought, there was a whole set of essays for a Scientific American contest, and all of those essays were about the possibility of a fourth dimension that we do not perceive. So fast forward to 1965, and it was after scientists had discovered that the stars are all moving away from each other. And, you know, that's a pretty astounding discovery. There was another person, Dionys Berger, in 1965, who took Abbott's work, and he basically transported those creatures from a literal flat plane to a huge sphere that's so big that compared to the creatures in their villages, it would be effectively flat, just like the salt flats of Utah are not really flat because they're on the surface of the earth. So he cast Abbott's fantasy, which was based on valid mathematics, into a fantasy that was equivalent, but into another set of mathematics, which is the mathematics of curved spaces. And by doing so, he was able to continue the story into the realm of an expanding universe. So he cast his creatures onto an expanding sphere. So again, fictional and interpretive, but not so much about outside. It's more about inside, about our perceptions. Like suddenly we perceive there could be a fourth dimension. Whereas science had encountered the need, this other line of thought, physics, had encountered the need to create a fourth dimension in its mathematics in order to deal with the bizarre behavior of light. And of course, you probably know how that one turned out. They cast the fourth dimension to be time. And that's where space, you know, left, right, up and down, forward, back, is said to be joined with time in a continuum. So in order to solve their problems that they encountered, and these are problems of mapping, and I'll talk about that later, but to solve the problems they encountered with measurement and prediction, they had to go to a fourth dimension. But they didn't go to one that was like the dimensions that you would imagine from the two books, Flatland and Sphereland. No, they went to a kind of mathematics that had been around. It was the sharpest tool in their shed. So you've heard the old adage that if you have a hammer, then every problem you encounter gets put in the form of a nail rather than, you know, finding something other than a hammer. And that's kind of what happened in physics, is they've used a hammer for everything. So when you use a hammer, you get time as a fourth dimension. And the story here with Storyweave is that if you locate and nourish that uncultivated root, then what you have is these seeds, these sprouts that grow into something other than the hammer. And when you do that, the idea of an additional dimension changes. And it changes from the out there idea of space and time forming a continuum to an in-here idea of a behavioral dimension within everything. And so Storyweave really brings those two stories back together. the story of experimental data as actually observed in physics, together with a more sensible mathematical framework for a fourth dimension. And that mathematical framework is really a sequel to the mathematics of the expanding sphere. So now, having said that, we're going to go into the final little segment of this episode of the podcast. So here's what I hope for in the future. I hope that there will be some people who are interested in mathematics and who at least are comfortable with geometry, who will actually learn the details of this alternate mathematics that comes from taking sphere land and altering it, getting around the obstacles. There's some obstacles to sphere land, some reasons that cannot be true. Our universe can't be like Sphereland, but this mathematics follows from Sphereland, gets rid of those obstacles. I would love it when we get some people who have studied this mathematics and have gone over it and have basically validated, yeah, they get it. Because this mathematics is not nearly as complicated as that hammer they use in physics. I studied those hammers, and they're very complicated. This is more relies more on your visualization, your ability to visualize. It doesn't require that black box mathematics that I think I've described before. So although I don't want to teach, you know, the idea is to help the helpers. That's the idea. The idea isn't to help physics. It's to help you helpers. And so being aware and having independent people who have said, yeah, this is the real stuff, then we will be in a situation where we can point to mathematics that's rigorous that tells us that the basics are there for in here, out there, for participation instead of parts, and for relational joining, and realizing that those are the very things you talk about when you help people. So we would have an alignment between the helpers, and when you talk about light and you talk about energy flowing, that's what this stuff is about. So if we have the situation of awareness by the helpers and validation by the young mathematicians and by the seniors, grandpa who knew mathematics and has now taken this up and can testify, yes, this stuff is real and it's valid, that's where StoryWeave is going. So thank you so much for spending this time listening to this. I look forward to your feedback. I'm putting out some Instagram reels and videos and post carousels. I'll be putting those out. I'm putting out some YouTube videos. I have a website that is now kind of under redesign, but it'll be there. And, of course, we have Bliss House Network, and we have Clubhouse to talk about things. So reach out to me through the website or on Instagram with Instagram or Clubhouse, and I'll be glad to talk to you about this, to teach you this, whatever works. So thank you.